This is Red Ice Radio. From the visible to the obscure. RedIceCreations.com.
Thank you for tuning in today. You are listening to Red Ice Radio. My name is Henrik Palmgren and our website is RedIceCreations.com. Wherever you are listening from around the world, a warm welcome to everyone. I hope you're doing well and ready for another important two-hour radio program. We have Josh Reeves with us from theglobalreality.com. He's a filmmaker, researcher, and radio host. He is behind the film The Secret Right, Volume 1, a film that investigates the secretive right-wing organization called the Council for National Policy, the CNP. It was founded in 1981 by the Reverend Tim LaHaye, as a networking tool for leading U.S. conservative political leaders, financiers, and religious right activist leaders. We are going to begin to discuss the connection that the CNP has to the Sovereign Military Order of the Knights of Malta, the Knights Templar, the Jesuits, but maybe more importantly, we'll discuss the ties that the CNP has to the alternative media. This is going to be really interesting. We're going to begin at one end here and run through the full spectrum, if you will, and let the research lead us in an effort to try to answer why and how humanity has been controlled with the crown and the cross for such a long time. Welcome to Red Ice Radio, Josh Reeves. It is great to have you with us here today on the program. First of all, thank you for taking the time to speak with us. We really appreciate it. How are you today, Josh?
I'm all right, Henrik, and thank you so much for having me on. It's a great honor for me to be here on Red Ice Radio because I've been a listener and a subscriber to the network for a long time and have actually played some of your interviews and stuff on my network before. And I've also interviewed Michael Desaurin about five times, and you've worked and done great work with him over the past several years. So I'm just excited to be here and be able to talk to your audience about the things that I research and talk about on my show and my film. So thank you again for having me.
Absolutely. I really appreciate it. It's going to be a lot of fun talking with you. You're behind the Global Reality, of course. You have your own radio show. You're making films like The Secret Right, of course. We'll get into that a little bit later as well. And you have different parts to it. I guess you're still working on part two upcoming. Is that correct?
Yeah, I'm actually working on that now and hoping to have that out by sometime in August. And we're going to do probably like a small release and kind of release parts of it. And then we're going to have a big full release after that. It's turned into a monster, Henrik, because there was so much information I had when I first started making part two. And then it just seems that every day there's new information coming out. There's more stuff coming out. And I try to get as much new stuff into the films as I can as they're coming out. Literally, after we put the day after the first film came out, which deals with a lot of the topics of these, you know, different right wing groups and stuff like that. We had the actual Tea Party group start the day after the film, the first part of the film came out. And, you know, it had exposed a lot of these people like Dick Armey and others who had started the Tea Party, and their involvement in some of these globalist organizations. So it was just the timing of that and all that's transpired now. It's just turned into a much bigger monster than I thought. So in this film, we're going to get a little bit deeper into, things like the Jesuits, and we're going to get a little bit deeper into some of the things that these groups have been involved in. But I'm excited about the film. I'm excited for people to see it. So, yeah, it'll be out very soon.
Absolutely. Excellent. We're going to talk a little bit about the first one here, obviously, as well. And what you've been doing is obviously looking behind the curtain a little bit of the alternative media as well, quite a bit in your research. Tell us here at the outset, Josh, a little bit more about the Global Reality and briefly, obviously, how you got into it as well.
Well, absolutely, and that's the whole looking into of the alternative media and all this stuff it's not something I ever set out to do. It was something that completely happened by accident and by happenstance, because I was very much when I started my radio show, I was very much in what you would consider the mainstream of the truth movement. I was very much a fan of people like Alex Jones and David Icke and other people like that. And that's really how I woke up. I woke up in when I was in high school. I'm 30, just turned 35 today. Today is my birthday.
Happy birthday,
and,
Josh.
Well, thank you. Thank you so much. And when I was about 16 or so, 15 or 16, it was just so odd. The library in the little school I went to was way out in the country, and there was only about 30 or 35 people in my class. But for some odd reason, they had a copy of Jim Marr's book, Crossfire, that deals with the John F. Kennedy conspiracy. And this was in our library, and so I got a copy of this, And it just blew my mind. And at that time, I was, you know, being a young guy, I was listening to a lot of, you know, rock music. I was listening to stuff like, you know, Megadeth and Rush. And I didn't really realize until later that those lyrics were talking about these type of topics and kind of probably influenced me to look into that. So I had read Jim Marsh Crossfire, and I'd sort of been in what you would call, you know, conspiracy research for a lot of years. But it wasn't until after 9/11, I was working for a software company at that time. And was making pretty good money. And then after 9/11 happened, I saw the mechanisms that were happening around me. My job got shipped off to another country. I saw things. And finally, I was just like, you know what? I've got to start trying to do something. At that time, right after 9/11, I didn't know what that something would be. I just kept researching and trying to learn more and everything else. And then in about 2006 or so, I decided I wanted to make a documentary film. I was going to make this documentary film, which I still haven't made yet because I've been busy with all these other things. And it was going to be on, it was basically going to set the record straight on secret societies, because for years I felt like I had heard, you know, all this different rumors and things about secret societies, some probably very true, other stuff not true at all. And so I kind of set out to disprove that. But somewhere along the way, the film ended up turning into a 9/11 film because I had all this other stuff about 9/11. So in 2007, I came out with my first film. It's called 9/11 New World Rising. And I had a premiere in Dallas for that film. And then just a few short weeks after that, I started my radio show. And again, like I said, you know, I was very much, you know, a supporter of Alex Jones and those type of people at that time. And I started my radio show. And the third show that I ever did, we had been planning on having former Canadian diplomat and author Peter Dale Scott on my show at our premiere in Dallas for the film. And he couldn't make it. And so I was like, there I was doing a radio show. I had like a 1 hour show at that time. I just started. And he emailed me and I said, hey, I've got a radio show now. Would you like to come on? And he said, sure. So Peter Dale Scott came on. That was huge for me. You know, big guest, just my third show in. I was really a rookie and not that good at doing radio yet. But during the interview, Professor Scott had mentioned this group. I started mentioning groups like the Trilateral Commission and the Bilderberg Group and stuff. And he said, well, you know, there's this other group you should look into, and they're way more secretive, way more powerful, and a lot less people know about them. And they don't really have, the CFR doesn't really have the power they used to have anymore. This group's way more powerful, and they control things like Blackwater, and they're involved in the military-industrial complex. And he said the name of the group, and I couldn't really understand him that well. And I went back to the rebroadcast over that weekend. And listen, he said, oh, the CMP, the Council for National Policy. Okay. So I go and I start looking up this group because he said that they had affiliations in Dallas where I live. That's my hometown. So I was going, wow, you know, I'm definitely intrigued like this because, you know, Henrik, I felt that as a lot of people do, you know, that was the whole reason why I wanted to do a show at that time. I felt that I'd been doing a lot of research for a lot of years and that I had a pretty good handle on this stuff. And I mean, well, I couldn't have been any more wrong about that. It turns out that, you know, as much as I knew at that time, turns out that I didn't know nearly as much as I thought that I did. And every day I learned more. And so I'm going and I'm researching this group, the Council for National Policy. And I come to find out that the strangest thing about it, Henrik, as soon as I start researching it and trying to find people who are involved, because it's very secretive, they meet three times a year in total secrecy. They meet in posh hotels. They don't make their membership lists available to the public. And, you know, I was sort of saying, well, you know, why aren't there people staking this thing out like they do the Bilderberg group meetings?
That's right.
And, you know, it just seemed very odd to me that nobody was doing that. And so I started finding, you know, what I could find. They don't make their current membership lists public, but we are able to get past membership lists. And then there's other times when people who are currently members just admit that they're members. And so I found this very interesting thing where it seems like people who are kind of on the lower level are openly, freely admitting the group and saying that, you know, hey, this is what we're doing. And then other people are very secretive about it. But the biggest thing that stuck out like a sore thumb for me was that I started noticing immediately that all these different names of people who I had heard on the Alex Jones show through the years, people like Dr. Stan Monteith and Pat Buchanan and Larry Pratt from Gun Owners of America, just on and on and on. I mean, it was just one after another. Jack McLam, I just not one name, not two names, not three names, but 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 names of people who were members of this secretive group that was started by the Hunt Oil brothers, who are Knights of Malta members as well. And they were the ones that paid for the Wanted for Treason posters that were published in Dallas, Texas the day before the Kennedy assassination in 1963. And I started saying, this is, you know, this is connected to the highest levels here.
Yeah.
And then I started finding Rothschilds in the group. I started finding DuPonts in the group. I started finding more and more people that seemed to be, like Phyllis Schlafly, for instance, connected to these various bloodlines of the elite. And something was really, really shaken in me by that, Henrik. I was rather dismayed. I mean, I couldn't sleep for 3 or 4 days. I was really freaking out because, and I showed it to another fellow radio host at that time. And I said, you know, can you look at this for me? You know, can you just take a look at this information and tell me what you think about it? And the person said to me, yeah, you know, if this is what you think it is, this could be very interesting. And so that's sort of what it led me, Henrik, into not really, I was never sent out to look into the alternative media or anything else like that, or never sent out to try and be one of these, because there's a lot of people out there that claim to be exposers of people, and a lot of what they claim to expose, it's just loose stuff. I mean, there's a lot of people that say bad things about Alex Jones and other people, and they're just not based in reality. They're not based in fact at all. And I think that's dangerous, because I never set out to be someone who's trying to chastise somebody else's work or say anything else at all. But there are some serious connections with that go right up to the very top of the quote unquote New World Order of the Illuminati, and they're connected to this group. And it seemed to me there's been such a moratorium on talking about it that, to me, that I inherently knew there was something behind it.
Well, absolutely. That's really interesting. And I think that I like what you say earlier as well, that we never have the full picture, it seems. Again, those who are willing to continue their research and not stop at one point obviously know that there's more behind the surface. It's an onion with, you know, infinite layers, if you will. You know, goes deeper and deeper and deeper all the time.
That's what I like about your show, is because, you know, you're not really judgmental on people and their information. I mean, you just allow people to come up here and put out their information, regardless of whether or not you agree with it 100% or don't agree with it or anything else.
That's right.
You're just providing people with a platform. And I think that to me is the most important thing for any of us to be doing. You know, just regardless of whether you agree with something or I agree with it, let's put it out there on the court of public opinion and let people decide for themselves what's real or not. And that's all I've ever asked people to do with this information as well, Henrik.
Absolutely. That's a really good strategy in that sense. Let the, you know, listeners decide. There's no reason to you know, not go anywhere or you know, censor obviously certain things. That's obviously not something that is of all at interest. I think that the most important thing is to try to get as much, you know, varied information as you can, as you're aware of, because that's another thing as well that I notice among some critics out there, if you will, as well, Josh. They don't leave any room for the fact that it might actually be such that you don't know about it, because how can we don't know everything. We don't have all the capabilities that everyone else has or the time to look into certain details about certain little groups here and there. But instead, I guess what I'm saying is that instead of just being criticized for that, why not just bring it to people's attention in the same way that you have? But I totally agree with you, Josh, what you said about the Bilderberg focus, the focus on Skull and Bones and the Bohemian Grove, when we have many different groups behind the scenes doing many different things as well. And there seems to be an overrepresentation, I guess, you're saying as well, on just focusing on certain groups when there is tons of groups out there, different agendas, different people that are striving for different things. And this is about, I guess, as well, kind of balancing the picture a little bit, knowing who's behind what and who's saying what, basically. Right, Josh?
That's the whole thing is for me, Henry, because that's why when I started my radio show, that's why I called it the global reality, is because you know, I started noticing that it seemed that people were kind of putting this focus in America that, you know, this whole New World Order stuff or all this stuff was only happening in the United States. And that's just flat not true. It's happening all over the world and it's affecting everyone globally. So the reality that we face is not just a reality that is compartmentalized to one specific country or one area. This is a reality that is global and it affects everybody. And we all need to know about that. So when I first started getting into this stuff, I got into it because of the research and because I felt like the information needed to be, you know, looked into farther and we didn't have the whole picture. And when I started noticing, you know, even before I found out about the Council for National Policy and sort of this information we're talking about, I started noticing, I couldn't understand why sort of the focus of like the truth movement in the United States was sort of, you know, you'd have people talking about, you know, their guns and their ammo and their weapons. And I'm going, you know, what does this have to do with research? I didn't sign up to be some, you know, some survivalist or some crazy, person who wants to hunker down in their bunker. Just something seemed odd about that to me. And I think that very much ties into this information, exactly what you're talking about. I'm not trying to say that the Council for National Policy is more powerful than any other group or there's one specific group in control. But one of the things that has come to my attention over the past 4 years of researching this is that all of the information that that really is the deeper elements of this, I would say stuff like the Sumerian texts, like Anunnaki stuff, Jesuit information, all of this information that is kind of left out. I think with intent, it's been left out so that people don't see the great picture. They, you know, they see a little bit of the picture, but they don't see the whole picture. And when you have the rest of this information, it makes the whole much larger picture seem a lot more clear to you. And I started noticing that there was this sort of this moratorium I noticed it on your network and stuff on the past where people would come on and kind of get mad at you guys or have a problem with you guys because you guys would talk about, you know, ancient aliens, or you would talk about extraterrestrials and the possibility of this seeding life on the planet. And some people had a problem with you guys talking about that. And I always wondered about that. I just said, you know, it seems very strange to me that that these certain topics are taboo to certain individuals. And I think that now with a lot of the research I've done, we kind of have a better idea why that is.
Absolutely. And I mean, it's just basically an arrogance. And obviously, this is an unwillingness for certain people to go in that direction. And just because they have made their minds up doesn't mean that everybody else has. And there's always more to the story. And there's always more that they probably have shut down to and don't realize about these kinds of topics as well. And furthermore, why are they even interested in controlling what everybody else is supposed to hear or listen to anyway? If they just let go of their control freak nature that they have and just let people decide for themselves, what's the problem with that? And furthermore, how does that then make them any different than the people that are trying to criticize, that are at the top of the New World Order, that are trying to control the whole global population? They're just a micro version of that, Josh.
No, I couldn't agree more. My research totally backs that statement right there up. They are a microcosm of that, because I've seen the same kind of thing happen. It's almost this dogmatic attitude. It's like you can be a part of the club, you can be a part of, you know, the truth movement, whatever, but you have to basically, you have to think the way we do. You have to have the same opinions. And if you don't have those same opinions, then we're going to ostracize you. We're going to call you a plant. We're going to call you a fed, whatever else, just because you don't see things the way that the intelligentsia of the truth movement sees them. I mean, I had a big problem with that, and that's why I stopped working with the local 9/11 group I was working with, because we started bringing in information that was sort of wider picture, and they just didn't want to have it. They wanted to focus on everything that had to do with 9/11, and that was it. And to me, that sort of seemed like, while 9/11 is a very important issue, as you mentioned earlier, it's, you know, as with any of this stuff, it's not the only issue. So the only way we're going to gain a greater perspective is by looking at everything.
That's absolutely right. And the dogmatic people seem to kind of cling to certain organizations and groups and what have you. Yep. And I've never been about that. For me, it's always been about follow the path, whatever, you know, that leads down to. And if, you know, even if I went on a wrong path then that I consequently understand afterwards, what's the problem with that? Then I've become wiser in the process. I've understood that now, and I'll move on in a new direction. So no problem at all. It's nothing. There's no worries, you know. But this is like this life and death every time, just because you read a book about the Anunnaki. You know what I mean? Come on,
I understand.
People.
Yeah, relax, no, I understand, because you know, it's the same way for me. I constantly change, you know, what I believe, Henrik. I mean, what I'm believing is not a static thing. It's constantly ever changing. Some of the things that I believed 6 months ago, a year ago, are totally different than what I believe now, because the research, new information is always constantly coming in, and there's been, you know, there's just been little things, little tidbits come at you, and you pick up on that, and you go, oh, you know, because for me, I had heard a lot about, talking about these topics that seem to be kind of taboo. I had heard for years this stuff about the Jesuits and about the Knights of Malta and sort of that whole end of things, but I never really saw a lot of information on it or a lot of research on it. So I kind of, like everybody else, kind of dismissed that as not being true or whatever else. And of course, I'd heard people like Eric John Phelps and stuff like that. And some of that stuff just kind of seemed like it wasn't correct to me. And then when I was researching the Council for National Policy, all of a sudden, all these connections to the Jesuit order started coming up, to the Knights of Malta. All these people in this group have these connections. And I started going, wait a second. You know, is this why there's sort of been a moratorium on talking about those groups within the truth movement? is because so many of the people in the so-called truth movement have connections to these groups. It does appear that way. It's just one of those things where you start to understand, okay, this is why, they say, oh, don't talk about the Anunnaki or don't talk about UFOs or don't talk about extraterrestrials, talk about the bankers and talk about the Rothschilds and blah, blah, blah. That was another thing that was a problem for me. It just seemed like, why? Why are you saying that these topics over here are okay and approved to talk about, but these topics over here are taboo? And again, my research has shown me that the reason that that is because some of these people are working either directly for or as agents of disinformation and gatekeeping for the establishment, for the custodians, for the people in charge themselves. And it's a very scary thing, but there is a lot of evidence points in that direction. So I'm sure we'll talk about a lot of that here today, Henrik.
Absolutely. I want to talk more about your take on the Knights of Malta, the Jesuit Order, some of the other organizations tied to this, the Catholic Christian organization, religion as such as well later. If we briefly then look at the CNP, the Council for National Policy, what do you think it means that we have people like Stan Monteith, Pat Buchanan, as you mentioned, Chuck Missler, Paul Craig Roberts, Larry Pratt, Jerome Corsi, some of these people, that they are part of this group? And how do you think that their research is tied to the agenda of the group? And maybe you even, do we know anything about the agenda of the CMP, considering that we don't hear that much about it, Josh?
Yeah, I mean, it's pretty obvious when you look at their policies, you look at some of the stuff that they're behind, that they're just as much a globalist organization as any other group you can bring up. But what I've found, it's taken me almost 4 years now to really realize this. Because as I mentioned at first, when I first got into finding out about the CMP, I think me, like everybody else, had this mentality of guilt by association, and that, every single person that's a member of the group knows what's going on at every level. And I found that to be just absolutely not true. I think that, yeah, like, for instance, Jerome Corsi, I've talked to him in person before at different events and asked him about the Council for National Policy, and he openly talks about it and says, oh, yeah, I'm a member of that. Yeah, they were going to run me for president back in 08, blah, blah, blah. Yeah, he's totally willing to openly talk about it. Doesn't seem to even have an idea that there's anything wrong with the group or anything else. And he seemed very genuine about it. And then I hear people like, Phyllis Schlafly, another one of these members on the Alex Jones Show, by the way. Phyllis Schlafly, if you look into her bloodline, this was admitted by genealogy websites online, she's a Merovingian blue blood on both sides of her family. She's from the Bruce bloodline and the Stuart bloodline. And those of you who've researched this stuff for a long time will know it's very, very rare that you have an offspring, a child like Phyllis Schlafly, that would be born of a bloodline on both her mother and her father's side of the family. And I went to an event one time where she was speaking, and everyone rose and applauded and was just acting like she was the Queen of England there. And now, I find that out. So I think what we have here is we have some people in the group that are aware of all of the elements of the group. They are aware of what the agenda is. And these are the people that you see the most in alternative media and others trying to downplay the effect of the group, the reach of the group, what they're involved in. And then I think you have other people who are just well-meaning sort of, people who are who are legitimately trying to get out information, but ultimately, what the group seems to be is it seems to try and be a catch-all for people that have certain issues, meaning you'll have one person in the group that seems to kind of focus on 9/11, or you may have one person in the group that seems to focus on UN stuff or abortion stuff. And it just seems that what they do is they bring all these people under one roof and then essentially give them their marching orders for how they are going to approach these issues in the public. So that combined with things like their 501c3 status that allows companies like the Coors family and others to donate large sums of money in the millions of dollars to this group. And because they have a 501c3 tax exemption, any millions of dollars that is donated to the Council for National Policy can then be written off by these companies on their taxes, and they get all that money back at the end of the year. So that's another thing that they're doing here. It's essentially like, okay, you scratch our back, we'll scratch yours. And I think that there are levels. I think they're compartmentalized as much as any other group. And I think that there are people at the highest levels that know absolutely what's going on, and other people. I think you have to be very, very careful about making accusations against somebody who's been involved with a group, because there are indeed cases where there are people who don't really have any idea what the group is involved in at a much larger level.
Well, that's right. It's a good point. Often I found as well that situations are more complex than that. There is a tendency in the conspiracy movement to simplify in most cases. In some cases, it is effective. It's the right thing to do in that sense. But it doesn't by default mean that these people are, you know, guilty of a darker agenda. I guess what I question personally is the rationality of a person who actually goes into an organization without really knowing, furthermore, what the organization does or what their role in it. They just like to hang out with, you know, other people of the same ilk, I reckon. I don't know what the mentality is there, but I'm not like that, so I can't understand that level of, you know, awareness or such, Josh. But often it is more complex. But you mentioned the bloodline connection. That's interesting, too. To you, does that mean... does that automatically make her, the person you mentioned, kind of guilty of being tied to the inner circle? Is it also applicable in that sense, Josh?
Well, I mean, I think that I don't know if it is necessarily. It just doesn't help. Let's say that. I mean, when you look at some of the ideas of, like, Phyllis Schlafly, for instance, she'll say that women need to stay home and stay in the kitchen and make babies and not go to college. And be uneducated and just stay home and take care of their man or whatever. But yet she has like 3 or 4 degrees. She's not doing that. So that, you know, that's one of those things where you say, okay, it's very hard to take you seriously when, you've got 3 or 4 degrees. You're not staying home pumping out babies. You're being out there in the world and being, your own woman, except you're telling women they shouldn't do that. So that combined with some of the issues that they talk about as far as trying to goad Americans into a new civil war and armed conflict. I mean, that's the biggest thing I have a problem with. But you also have these connections back to, connections with people in the group that go back to the Knights of Malta. You've got even somebody like Stan Monteith, whose show Radio Liberty was started out as a Sovereign Military Order of Malta Nazi front. They didn't even change the name from Radio Liberty over at all when Monteith took it over. And you look into him, and he's a part of this bloodline as well. So, it's more the fact that the group is so secretive about their activities and their membership is why you have to question anybody that's in these bloodlines involved with the group. Because, if you guys are honestly not up to anything and there's nothing nefarious going on, I don't understand why we can't know who current members are. I don't understand why we can't know where these meetings are. I mean, hell, we know where the Bilderberg Group meetings are at. We always know who were in those things, but we still don't know where these CMP meetings are held. We don't know who's in them. And I think the big reason why is because if the media was actually allowed to see people, because oftentimes in the way you see it now, you have the right wing movement in the United States, but you also have it's splintered. There's, you know, a million different factions of it. You have these Tea Partiers over here, and then you have the Tea Party Express over here. And you have, you know, you just have these different factions and groups within the group itself. And this is essentially how they deal out the marching orders of their individual operatives who are all right wingers. But, you know, again, some who are on this issue over here, there's a great example of that in my film, The Secret Right Volume 1. A great example of that is we have a clip of Larry Pratt and former, John Ashcroft. There's essentially, you know, this ABC News clip in that film where they're kind of arguing over each other about some new Patriot Act law stuff. And John Ashcroft is saying it's good. Oh, it's wonderful. And then the next thing you know, of all people, they show Larry Pratt from Gun Owners of America, who was involved in Iran-Contra, who was involved in white supremacist meetings with Howard Phillips, setting up the militia movement. He said that the United States needed a militia movement like the Contras. And then you hear this guy touted as some gun rights expert all over the Alex Jones show. And he's been connected to Pat Buchanan and the Center of Inter-American Security, where they were doing stuff for the Iran-Contra. So, it becomes very, very suspicious once you start seeing these groups that are involved in various high-level activity of the New World Order.
Absolutely. It's interesting to see how the Bilderberg Group now have their own official website. They release their members list online. And I'm not saying that isn't because of the work that people have done, you know, in the alternative media circles and obviously bringing this to the attention of the mainstream. We have people like, I think it's Charlie Skeleton or whatever from The Guardian writing regularly now about when the Bilderberg meeting occurs. And there is a lot of mainstream media, you know, attention on it right now. So obviously they, you know, would have transformed into another organization by now that meet under circumstances where they can be left alone. So that's kind of understandable. But what we're focusing on here, obviously, is all these other little micro organizations that are out there and so forth as well. But to me, it seems like there is a lot of individuals out there that are participatory in, if you will, then infiltrating different groups and in some cases, maybe even starting up movements or groups as well. For the sake of, you know, one point is to rally up people around an agenda or a common cause, if you will. And in the first level, that might be to kind of coax people out, if you will, those who are critical of certain issues. It's good for, you know, the upper elite to kind of know who those people are, if you know what I mean, Josh, to kind of get those involved in the groups. And I want to try to kind of get to what you think is the ultimate, if there is such a thing, an ultimate agenda of that. When I look a lot at a lot of the information out there in terms of the alternative media, I do see a lot of aggressiveness. It's about gunning up, if you will, in that sense, hunkering in the bunker. And I'm not against, you know, owning guns or anything like that.
Or but being prepared, no.
Of course, no, absolutely not. But I can also see the spreading of fear, this incredible ending up in survival mode. And oh my God, shit is falling down all around you right now. But then in most cases, I'm not saying that it's not dire as well, but I'm just saying that this is a very black and white issue. There's no gray or middle ground here, where if I go out to the streets on a city here in Sweden, you know, I can see that in certain aspects, yep, I can see that there's a control grid coming in. I can see cameras here and there in different aspects, but the world is not falling around me as I walk there. There's still little regions of freedom to work and operate within the system, and it's not
as dramatic.
Yeah,
life is still day to day. Yeah, life is still day to day. Yeah.
So, what do you see there in terms of that? Do you feel that it is a rallying up of people that are potentially on the cusp of being, you know, let's say, critical of the government, let's say, and it's efficient for them, for the government, for the elites to actually try to coax these people out, try to understand who they are. So let's kind of focus on the negative things and let's get them try to react to this. What do you think,
Josh? I think that's an element of it. I think that they're definitely trying to. I mean, some stuff is allowed to come out. I think certain piece of information, many times I've said, okay, this is kind of suspicious. Why are we being allowed to see this? You know, as if it's some sort of a honeypot, you know, trying to bait us into this to see, you know, how much we know or anything else, and to identify those people who, you know, may get off of the plantation, so to speak, who may, you know, actually, as you mentioned, delve off and into other realms of information and may not just follow, you know, what the mainstream of this are telling people. And I will get into that in just a minute as far as, you know, what I think the deeper elements of this are, because there are deeper elements I've found within my research, I mean, to the deepest levels. But I want to go back and mention something, because I sort of lost my train of thought there the last bit we were talking about. I mentioned that clip in the volume one about Pat Buchanan and John Ashcroft. And so again, they're appearing to be on both sides, on two different sides of this issue. And then you find out, wait a minute, these guys are both members of the Council for National Policy, but yet on television and to the public, they appear to be divided on this issue. And I show, right after showing that ABC News clip, I show on the screen a letter from John Ashcroft to Larry Pratt, thanking him and praising him for his work, but yet in the media, these guys are being touted as being against each other.
That's,
you know,
right.
Here's Larry Pratt. And so that to me is just it's kind of a microcosm for the whole thing, where you see, okay, these guys on television and in the media appear to be against each other, kind of like, you know, the two WWF wrestlers, you know, I'm going to kick your butt. No, I'm going to kick your butt.
Right.
But then behind closed doors, they're slapping five and they're having big drinks and they're good buddies. So That was another thing for me. I went, okay, I see what this is. This is kind of the way that they divide and conquer people, because one of the things that they referred to themselves as when the group first started, they referred to themselves as the right-wing version of the Council on Foreign Relations. One of the things that as I started going back farther and farther into researching the group, I started noticing that the group actually had its origins, if you trace it back far enough, actually had its origins in the Fabian Society, the Fabian Socialist Society, that originated out of the London School of Economics in the early part of the 20th century.
So, Josh, when you go far enough to the right on the left circle, then you end up on the extreme right, right? Or well, I mean, well, they meet up. You find back
out
there.
That the yeah, you find out that the international socialists, the you know, from the Royal Institute of International Affairs to the CFR to all these groups are actually ultimately in the end funded and created by the Fabian socialists who create the left groups and the right groups to assume total control. That's what the most important thing to me about the Council for National Policy is because upon their formation in 1981, what they assured that anyone who voted for either party in the left-right political spectrum in the end would get socialism. Look how many things were brought in, socialist things were brought in under Reagan, from Reaganomics to all this stuff, which led us to the economic thing that we are now. On and on and on. They've just become the kind of the, you know, everybody sees the right wingers as the, it's just the stereotype that they're the warmongers.
That's right.
It's the stereotype that they're the Christian fanatics. And essentially what they do is they put out this idea in the media that, you know, you want to be with anybody but those crazies. You know, I mean, anybody in their right mind wouldn't associate with, you know, Jerry Falwell or, you know, John Hagee or these crazy religious zealots. And so what that does is it drives people back over to where they want people to be, and that is back over towards the left wing into the socialism. So that was another big thing for me, Henrik. It seemed like that everybody was always trying to say that the whole New World Order conspiracy and everything was all left wing. It was like, you know, all the left wingers are behind the New World Order, but the right wingers over here, they're free and clear, and they're not involved in any of this stuff. And I said, well, that's just flat not true when you look at the research and you look at the things that these guys are connected with. And I mean, everything from, you know, like as I mentioned before, Iran-Contra, everything to that, to the impeachment of Bill Clinton. I mean, Bob Barr admits in his book, former CIA agent, head of the NRA here in the United States, he admits in his book, the meaning of is that they cooked up and concocted the plan to impeach Bill Clinton at the Council for National Policy meeting in 1996. So, you know, we have lots and lots of things, and I'm going to be detailing more of those in the new film, The Secret Volume 2. I'm going to be detailing some of the other stuff they've been involved in from things like the Franklin cover-up with these different to the foundation of the Temple of Set in the United States. Also to we're going to show how Johnny Gosch and Jeff Gannon are the same person. I mean, it's going to get into a lot of the deeper elements of this, and I think that's the most important thing that people need to know is that, you know, whether or not so-and-so who's in the CMP is a good person or a bad person is neither here nor there. What really is important is that any time that anyone is involved in groups that are working at the highest levels in secrecy, we should be allowed to ask questions about that.
Is this then, in that sense, this is the controlled opposition that you mentioned that it's being set up? So again, I'm back to that point that if there is a true voice of valid criticism out there, they won't never reach the top because that role will be fulfilled by one of these people who are controlled, if you will, Josh, already.
That's exactly how it is. That's exactly what it is. For instance, I always make the example, Henrik, of saying, okay, let's say that you wanted to start your own grassroots movement to find out the truth about 9/11. Let's just say you didn't have any idea there was already a 9/11 truth movement or any of this stuff out there. You just found out that 9/11 was a fraud. And you want to start your own group to take. Well, what happens is you go, okay, I'm going to start a group and this is going to be my focus. And here it is. And then you get online or whatever and you start looking. You go, oh, wait a minute. There's already a group for this. There's already, you know, this whole established thing for this for years and years. So what do you do? Do you start your own group, you know, that focuses on what the issues are important to you? Or are you more likely going to just go ahead and join the already existing group where people are already working on this? And go along from there. And I think that's what most people do. And I think that for my research anyway, that this is how it's been set up and designed to be that way so that, again, they can control the perimeters of the conversation. They can control what elements of the information are allowed to be in there and talked about and what elements are not.
And then on top of that, of course, Josh, you have the next level of that where potentially, again, then well-meaning good people that want to try to, you know, expose this and that and the other, end up potentially in a role of just infighting, if you will, where people out there put all their energy on trying to discredit the other group. And at the end of the day, if you think about it, then they, the top, you know, crusty elite, have still won at the end of the day, because none of the energy and focus is actually being put on exposing and shining a light on them. But all this infighting underneath is going on, this petty little tyrants running around and try to, you know, put each other down, basically. So they win at the end. Crazy,
yeah,
huh?
It's unbelievable that the stuff that I've seen, and you know, I've been accused of that, and I've been called a divider, and I'm trying to divide people and everything else, and I've never tried to do that. I always wanted to try and bring people together and work with as many people as I possibly can. The problem is that the trauma based mind control and the brainwashing of the intelligentsia of the truth movement is so heavy sometimes that it's very hard to do that. I got to tell you, you know, the one person out of all of in all my years of doing this that has never let me down and has never been, anybody I've ever has always done what they said they were going to do has been Michael Tesorian. I mean, he told me when I first started, I interviewed him for the first time in 2008, and I was just, you know, pretty fresh learning about the group. And I interviewed him, and I told him I was making the volume one about the film. And he said, well, you know, let me know when you're done with that film, because I want to promote it, because it's, to me, it sounds like, you know, you found a lot of the same things I have, but just in a different way, and people need to know about that. And, you know, I had a lot of people say that to me. A lot of people, oh, yeah, you know, we want to help you promote the film and this, that, and the other. And I got to say, Michael Tesorian was the only person out of anybody who promised me that actually lived up to what he said he would do. And he put the film on his website, promoted it. I just can't thank him enough for that. And so when you see that there are real people out there, and especially people at the level of Michael Tesorian, who really actually do want to work with you and actually are involved in looking at the truth, it gives you a lot of hope and lets you understand that, look, as long as you're just focusing on the information, and the information is first, not this petty, you know, ad hominem attack or personality right. attack stuff that people always want to resort to. As long as you're focusing on the information, then that's going to rise to the top. You know, all the naysayers and the people who try to say things about you, you know, all that stuff's going to go by the wayside. I've always asked people to just look, you know, if you can contest this info about the Council for National Policy or any of this stuff that I put out, please bring that contrary information to the table. And of course, so far, nobody else has done that yet, Henrik.
Well, I mean, exactly. You're right. I mean, there might be disagreements. There might be different things out there that people sure. not on the level agree with, but that's not the point. If people are, you know, not operating from that level of just being emotionally defensive all the time, and put that to the side and actually focus on the things that are important. And then again, you can work together on the issues that you do find, you know, common ground on. And then if there's something else that doesn't fall in, so what? I mean, that being different, that's a good thing. Again, otherwise we're back in the same idea again. This is a micro version of the New World Order. They're trying to homogenize yep. everything, of making everything one. You know what I mean? So difference,
I've
diversity
seen those
is
tactics.
Good. Yeah.
Yeah, I've seen those tactics used by people, Henrik. I've seen people, you know, for instance, there was, even before I was even kind of aware of all the stuff about the Council for National Policy, the network I used to be on in 2008 when I started, we started getting calls from sponsors that we would try to get for the network. And they were saying that Alex Jones had said, oh, yeah, don't sponsor these guys or whatever. And we started hearing all this stuff back. And I'm like, you know, why would you try to intentionally sabotage somebody else's reach for the benefit of your own thing? That's a, you know, that's sort of a big business tactic. You know, that's not what this is supposed to be about.
That's right.
And in 2008, when I went to this meeting, it was here in Dallas. It was called the Freedom 21 Conference, and it was sort of a right-wing anti-agenda 21 conference.
Yeah,
it had
that's right.
a lot of these members of the Council for National Policy, like Phyllis Schlafly and Larry Pratt and Jerome Corsi and all these different people. And I said, you know, I'm going to go in this thing, and I'm going to go in there with my camera, and I'm going to get in their face, and I'm going to get in their comfortable little world, you know,
right.
and I'm going to ask them to answer for this. And I got in there, and I started to go, you know what, that's the wrong tactic.
Right.
I really had to grow a lot at that thing. I was like, you know what? That's what the, you know, what the truth movement or whatever everybody puts out that, oh yeah, you know, you go up there and you get in their face
yell
and you
in
get
their
a
face,
nice.
Yeah. It's not going to help anything. It doesn't help anything.
It's not going to help anything.
No.
And I realized that. I said, you know what? I've spent my listeners, that support my work and make donations and stuff. They paid for me to go to this thing. And I'm sitting here thinking, you know, we had to spend all this hundreds of dollars to get into this hotel and stay at this hotel and get, you know, tickets to this event. If I go up and start yelling at these guys, I'm going to get maybe 20, 30 seconds of video. It'll be on YouTube. It'll be a funny laugh. Yeah. For a day. And then everybody will forget about it. Or what I can do is go in here and actually approach these people like human beings and ask them if they'll talk to me. And of course they didn't. Larry Pratt went from Gun Owners of America. This is absolutely true. I walked up to him, and when he saw me walking up, he knew immediately who I was. My reputation preceded me. He turned ghost white. I mean, I think that he thought I was either about to hurt him or kill him or yell something out about him in front of his. He just turned ghost white when he saw me. And I just walked up and said, Mr. Pratt, I've tried getting you on my radio show before, and I've just had problems getting you on. And there's some things, issues I want to talk to you about. And before I could even finish what I was saying, he's like shaking and putting his card in my hand saying, call me, you know. And I, of course, I did try to call him after that and could never get him on. But the point of the matter is that at the base level of this, you know, I don't know about all, but some of these people actually are human beings. And I think that we can get a lot farther, you know, if we try to say, hey, look, you know, this is the question I have. I want to know why you guys are in this secretive group. I want to know why you guys meet three times a year in secrecy, why you've got people at the highest levels of everything from business to government to low-level groups to media, why there's no media allowed other than, you know, WorldNet Daily is the only media they ever allow in there. So all these questions, and I find that, you know, again, some people are very, very apt to want to talk about it, and then others are, or you know, I won't talk about it at all.
Listen, Josh, I mean, if people, or if you in this case, I mean, have an opportunity to talk to these people, do a cohesive interview, and actually try to get some coherent information out, I mean, that's the best way to do this. Is this not about understanding what they are about and trying to figure this out? I mean, otherwise, if we just, as you said, you just go up there and yell at them or some other stupid stuff, it's going to be exactly. It's going to be fun for somebody on YouTube for a few days. But that will be that. We have not gone any wiser in terms of what actually is making these people tick, if you know what I mean. And furthermore, this is like that. We're back in the chessboard situation. Are you a black, you know, a player or a white player on the chess board? Are you, you know, a pawn in the game, if you will, in that sense? Or can you actually transcend over that and try to understand from a broad overview what the chess game is about, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And that's been the whole thing about this for me is really seeing what, like, the finding out about the Council for National Policy and going down the rabbit hole of this information has not shown me how much I know or proven how much I know. Again, it's shown me how much I don't know. Because I'm constantly having to shift and change what I believe because there's new information coming in every day. So again, I think that I think is most important is that we see in these groups like the Council for National Policy, microcosmically, it is a microcosm for the much larger power structure itself, meaning that at the very top, there are people who definitely have an idea of what the greater agenda is. They are definitely doing everything in their actions that they do on a daily basis to forward that agenda and to push it forward. But then there, on the flip side of that, there are people at the lowest levels who are involved in these groups who have no idea what is going on at the top. And I think those are the type of people that we need to try to get this information in the hands of, Henrik, because those people at the low level that don't know anything about what's going on at the top, if they see some of this information like I've put out in my films and on my radio show, it may encourage these people to say, you know what, that's not a group I need to be associating with. These guys are kind of up to no good here. And that, to me, I think is one of the biggest and best things that we can shoot for is hopefully trying to get some people that may want to become whistleblowers or say, hey, look, you know, I was a part of this and this is what's going on. And I think that you're never going to get that unless you create an environment first that says, hey, you know, we want you to do that. We're not your enemy. We're your friend. We just want the truth here. And I think that, as you stated, you know, there's too much aggression sometimes when it comes to this stuff, and we just don't need that negative energy.
That's right, absolutely. We are beginning to round up here a little bit for the first hour. We want to carry on, talk more with you in the second here, but I guess I want to reiterate or go back to this point that you mentioned before about the Fabian socialists, again, before we do that. Is that where your research has led? Do you see that at the, you know, at the further back, if you will, in the back room, the dark agenda behind this leads back to the Fabian socialists. Is that what?
Well, at a certain smaller level, but it definitely goes back even farther than that. The biggest thing that I found that this goes back to is, again, you have many members of the Council for National Policy who are, this is what's interesting, because we're told that the Freemasons and the Jesuits are supposed to be against each other. We see the Jesuits taking this blood oath against Freemasons and all the rest of stuff. But inside the Council for National Policy it's interesting. We have 33rd degree Freemasons like Rick DeVos, who's the founder of Amway. He also subsequently owns a basketball team in Orlando, Florida called The Magic. Although it's funny, a 32nd degree Freemason owns a team called The Magic, you know. So we have him and we have that. We have other Opus Dei members in the Council for National Policy, Knights of Malta. So within the framework of this group, we have a lot of people from a lot of different secret societies. And, you know, there's even guys that go back to that have worked with the Federal Reserve. You have people like Richard Haass, who's a member of the Council on Foreign Relations and a member of the Council for National Policy. So, you know, some of these guys play both sides of the field. But for me, it goes directly back. And this is why you have so many religious zealots, people like, John Hagee and Pat Robertson, all these religious preachers being members of the Council for National Policy. They're where the real power lies in the CNP is their connections to what many people refer to as the priest class, the priestly classes, the Jesuit order, the Vatican, the Rome in general. That's really who we see as the controllers of the Council for National Policy and its constituents. And as I've found more and more recently, after reading William Bramley's book, The Gods of Eden, interviewing him, what I found more and more, Henrik, is that it goes back even farther than that. The origins of this group go back to the origins of the Illuminati, which is exactly why a lot of people in the truth movement have this sort of scripted idea of what the Illuminati is, that it's all Weishaupt and everything. They never talk about the Los Alumbrados Society, which was actually St. Ignatius Loyola, who was the creator of the Jesuit order, was a member of
the Spanish Catholic branch of this.
Yes. Yes. And so that's the one thing I'm finding more and more is that the importance of the CMP and the importance of this information is that these guys go back to the bloodlines, go back to the custodians, which go back to the Anunnaki. And this is why we're being told by the intelligentsia. This is what I believe. This is why we're being told by the intelligentsia of the Patriot movement and the truth movement and whatnot that these topics are taboo and we shouldn't look into those topics. We should focus on the bankers and the rest of this stuff. But I'm starting to figure out really why that is. And that is because these people are somehow affiliated either through blood or their actions or anything else to the power structure itself that goes back to these bloodlines that originated in ancient Sumeria.
That's right. And then you probably have some people within there as well that are working their best, if you will, trying to, I don't know, gain credibility maybe in the mainstream media. And they have some idea that, oh, no, therefore we cannot absolutely not talk about this. And now you're discrediting the whole organization and everything that we've worked for. But again, I'm back to that situation. So what? Let's let the ships fall where they may, and let's follow this thing and see where the heck it leads up. What's the problem with that, you know?
Obviously, we have a problem, and we've got to get to the bottom of it.
That's right. Okay, Josh, let's begin here to wrap things up here for the first hour. Let's talk a little bit about your website, obviously, theglobalreality.com. Mention your radio program, mention your films, and how people can go about, obviously, looking, accessing more of your material, and if there's anything else you have out there that you want to, you know, promote or plug, if you will, Josh.
Thank you, Henrik. And again, yeah, my website is www.theglobalreality.com, and all my stuff is there. They can find my links to listen to the radio show live. They can find the archives. All my documentary films are up there as well. We have chipping banners and donate buttons there for people to support our work because we don't have advertisements. We don't sell gold or water filters or anything out. We're just fully, whatever the audience feels they want to give us, that's how we survive. And people can also just go to YouTube and type in Josh Reeves, and they'll find my name there and find a lot of videos and different clips that people have made. So thank you, Henrik. I really enjoyed this first hour. I'm looking forward to doing the listener hour next.
Absolutely. TheGlobalReality.com. That's the website. Head on over there and check out a lot of the material that Josh has out there. And I think it will be a very, very valuable addition to your, if you will, little arsenal of varied information to try to get a grasp on what the heck is going on. And specifically then, if you've been into the alternative media already for a long time and you've been intrigued by a lot of the information out there, again, the rabbit hole always goes a little bit deeper. So run with that, go with that, and just explore, investigate, and search. And the truth stands on its own. It doesn't need to be defended in that sense. And we'll see where all of this leads to. But stay with us, Josh, and we'll continue to talk more here in the next hour. In the second hour with Josh Reeves, we are going to continue down the rabbit hole and listen to where his research has led him. We are going to connect many of the dots and paint a picture that takes us off-world in an attempt to fully understand what the agenda of the elite priest class really is. And this ties together the possibility of a real or fake alien invasion, the looting of the Baghdad Museum, and now the invasion of other Middle Eastern countries. This new crusade that we're seeing is being spurred by the secret agenda of the search for artifacts from the ancient world. What are they looking for? If you want to hear more, you need to stay with us. We'll proceed with this discussion with Josh Reeves in our members area. Log in or subscribe at redicecreations.com. Try it out for 3 months if you haven't already. You can read about all the details on the website. Stay tuned as we continue to bring you some of the most important radio with people like Dolores Cannon, Lindy Cowling, John Lash, Andy Lloyd, Davey Hatchard Childress and Brian Forrester, Joseph P. Farrell, and also Christopher Knight and Alan Butler, to name a few of our upcoming guests. Thank you for staying with us. More coming up now with Josh Reeves.